Welcome to the Tribune Podcast. I'm Jonathan Harley. I'm joined by Ross Dunbar. We've got a lot of things to talk about today, but I think the main thing to talk about is Bayer Leverkusen, who are now without Roger Schmidt. He's been sacked as their manager, and this morning announced that Typhoon Korkut will be taking on the job until the end of the season. So let's get straight into that. Ross, how do you feel?
I think it probably was inevitable, given the results. Three wins from the last nine games is not good if you're trying to get to the top four. And there's been that kind of fragility about Leverkusen for some time under Schmidt, that they're always just like one game away from a complete disaster. And the style of football is very high risk, and they just seem to be on the precipice of something really outrageous at times, you know. And you look at them this year, they spent most of the time in the bottom half of the table, and I think Leverkusen probably made this decision quite begrudgingly, because I think Schmidt got on really, really well with Rudi Völler and guys in the executive board, and I think inevitably it just had to come to an end because of the results. I mean, Leverkusen as a club don't want to be outside of the European positions, and on the kind of trends of the last few months, it doesn't look likely that they're going to finish in those positions.
But do you not think it's a strange appointment?
Typhoon Korkut? Yeah, I do. I do think it's a strange one, but I mean, I guess it's a caretaker position, isn't it? I mean, they are thinking about from there until the end of the season. Korkut did quite well at Hanover. I think he's an okay coach. I don't think he's a terrible trainer. Kaiserslautern wasn't great, but as you know,
I get the feeling that's more to do with the board.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think that team needs a coach who can galvanise the squad. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of players who seem to be at first gear a lot of the season. That's the impression I got. And also, they need a bit of organisation. I mean, before we came on air, you mentioned that this weekend there's been so much poor defending, but with Leverkusen, it feels like the whole season. I mean,
yeah, but let's talk about that, because I mean, you know, Roger Schmidt obviously had an identity to the way that he had his teams play. But, you know, was the main flaw in that identity a lack of defensive quality?
A good question. I don't think it is a lack of quality. I mean, they brought in Alexander Dragovic, who was very highly rated from playing in Dynamo Kiev, and they got the guy they were chasing for so long. So I don't think it's a lack of quality. Jonathan Tah's a good defender. Omar Toprak is okay defender. I mean, he's not great, but he's not bad. But like I said, their whole style of play is very high risk. I mean, it looks great on the eye when it works because it's so exhilarating to watch. But if something is out of sync, then the whole thing just breaks down, right? I mean, you look at the Atletico game, good example. You know, Wendell, especially at fullback, going into a bad position, it opens up so much space for someone else to take advantage of it. And it kind of, I think development was a big problem. It didn't look to me as if, not in the players necessarily not buying into it, but it didn't look to me as if the players were really understanding what they were trying to do.
It does seem like sometimes that individual errors have cost Roger Schmidt his job at times, though. I mean, you look at the Dortmund game on the weekend, obviously conceding six goals is, you know, it's unacceptable. But there were just so many moments. I mean, even look at Aranguiz for the opening goal, just very sloppy, individual mistakes that maybe you can't blame the manager for entirely. But then again, on the other side, on the other hand, 11 goals conceded from set pieces. You know, those are things that you can prevent. And so I think there are more questions than answers when you look at Schmidt's time. But 2.5 years, when you talk about development and seeing a positive change, yes, we talked about it in a number of pods before, that they've made it to Champions League knockout rounds, that they've finally become that type of team. But to take the next step, it looks like they had to make a change.
Do you think Leverkusen, do you think the economic kind of factor of not being in European football was a big reason for them to make this decision? Because if they're not in Europe next year, what's that going to do to the squad? Are players going to leave? And there's all these questions that come after
Definitely. I mean, you know, when you have players like Chicharito, you know, you need to be able to guarantee him the top level of football, because for a player like that, even at his age, not playing in the elite competition in club football is a problem. And it's going to be a problem for players like Julian Brandt. It's going to be a problem for players like Karen Bellarabi or Kai Havertz, you know, the longer that they stay at the club. So, yes, it is a problem if they don't make Europe. But then again, what if they do under Korkut and they sort of sneak in? And, you know, this whole, obviously he's been given the job to the end of the season. Who are they? They must have long-term plans, right? But then that makes me think, Leverkusen are quite a forward-thinking club. Why haven't they been thinking about this before? It's not like the Schmidt situation has been coming out of the blue, is it? So it seems a bit strange to me. I can understand a stopgap appointment, But is there really no one out there that they were interested in? I mean, not a lot of managers, right?
Well, so. I think it's pretty clear that they were thinking about getting rid of him in the winter break. I mean, as I said, that Rudy Vola really likes him, and it looks bad for Fowler if this doesn't work out. So they've come to a decision that they had to get rid of him. But in the winter break, they got rid of the athletic coach. They felt that, okay, rather than get rid of the manager, okay, let's get rid of someone else, because, you know, apparently the players had some issues with the athletic trainer. Apparently some of the players said they didn't want to do training, and they go and do the training session, they get injured, and so on and so forth. Right? Yeah, of course. But I think that was one of the reasons to get rid of him, but also to try and give the manager some support. I think Schmidt is the kind of guy who feels that if he feels doubts about people, then he's off them right away. Because Leverkusen have got two or three team managers, quote unquote, and these guys have been kind of shunted to the side because Schmidt doesn't trust them. They're not Schmidt's guys. And they've, you know, for example, they've brought in the former media director of Hamburg to basically sit alongside them, basically to do all the admin duties, do all the kind of, you know, organising when the team bus leaves, organising what they're going to eat after the game, blah, 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 all that kind of thing. But the reason that they've brought this guy in is because he's best pals with Schmidt, and Schmidt needs guys that he can trust. So that suggests to me that there was already doubts in their mind in January that they were going to make this decision, because even if you go back to last season, you know, it was only really the last 9 or 10 games that Leverkusen picked up in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
We were in exactly the same position last year. So even then, there must have been a kind of thought process, okay, if he goes, who's the next guy who's going to come in? Maybe they already do have someone lined up, and they obviously just want someone to kind of to fill that void. I mean, I've heard rumours that they want Nagelsmann. Would that happen without European football? I highly doubt it, especially if Hoffenheim are going to get into the top four. But you're right. I think it's not the most inspiring appointment with Typhoon Korkut. But if you look not too far away from Leverkusen, Mönchengladbach, who have brought in Dieter Hecking, we all raised eyebrows at Dieter Hecking coming in because he didn't do particularly well at Wolfsburg, other than the season he finished second. And at Nuremberg, he was, you know, not the greatest of coaches, but it's worked for them. And, you know, look at them now. They're going for European places, they're going for the Europa League, and now they're going for the German Cup. So I think these stopgaps can work. You know, I don't believe too much in the managerial bounce, like bringing a new coach, it's going to automatically make a huge difference. But I think perhaps the players need to be kind of coached out of Schmidt's ideas.
Yeah, I mean, those ideas that we saw on the pitch were so often win the ball back and then rely on an individual sense of quality, you know, and you have that in Julian Brandt and Chicharito and Havertz and Bellarabi, all of these players that are capable of producing that. But let's look at the Dortmund game as an example of that, you know, that we saw that in moments, you know, that attacking play. But there's not been enough of that for me. You know, Kevin Folland shrugs off Socrates like a veteran striker and scores brilliantly. But that hasn't happened enough, right, in Kevin Folland's case or in Leverkusen's case. And that's then a problem if your style of play is so risky that at the other end you are opening up gaps left, right and centre. Let's be honest, Dortmund could have had 8 in this game. There were a couple of chances, you know, Dembele and Aubameyang, I think, of those 2 chances that they didn't take. And that's 8 goals conceded, you know, that's...
Well, do you think Schmidt was too stubborn tactically?
Almost certainly. I mean, the interview that Steph did with him for The Guardian ahead of the game against Tottenham, where he said, you know, people have said you don't think about defence very much. His first instinct is always to think about attack. And I think that was obvious from the way that you saw that. But how often do you follow an instinct when it's quite obviously not always the right one? His instinct to attack is fine. And as you said, there are times where it just looked brilliant. But you can't forego a defensive responsibility. Yes, on the one hand, some of those mistakes were individual. But on the other, you know, 11 goals conceded from set pieces, that's something that you can improve. And just generally, the behaviour of individuals in situations, we talked about Wendell a lot, the same in Dortmund, there were times where you just feel like he's tucking in and not going out. Why are players not closing down enough? I think it was on Pulisic's goal when Guerrero is out wide, and Wendell sees him, looks in, and sort of gets to the edge of the box and sort of, but he's still five or 10 yards away from even closing him down. And it's things like that. You think it's just totally, come on, you know, that's 101. And then you have to ask why. Is it because Schmidt's asked you to do something differently or not? But
I mean, only Darmstadt have a poorer defensive record in the second half of the season, which is unacceptable.
That says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I always felt that too. I mean, I'm not gonna say that his style of football was wrong, because it's not. I mean, it's just a kind of stylistic issue. I mean, for me, I just felt the execution of it at times was just horrendous at times. I mean, like, you know, you mentioned Vindel, and I don't want to just pick on one player. I also feel the same way about Henricks at right back. I know there's a lot of
swingers.
Yeah, there's a lot of hype about these guys, and I get it. I get why these guys are hyped. I think it's a social media thing that, oh, he's a young player, so he's brilliant. He's got to be brilliant. Young player can never be poor. And I just find that positionally, these guys probably were coming from a style of football, you know, that wasn't the same in their development years. You know, if they had, Benjamin Henricks was playing up front, yeah, playing on the right wing, he wasn't playing right back. And if great, the one thing that sticks in my mind, and I know that it's just this one little kind of snapshot of Leverkusen's defensive issues, was against Atletico Madrid. Vendel is up a kind of bouncing ball, kind of at the halfway line. Brandt and Vendel don't know who's going to go for it. Vendel goes for it, misses it. He's out of position. They go down the right hand side. Campo goes in for the tackle, misses it as well, and it's just basically 2-on-2. It's such high risk defending, and especially in a league like the Bundesliga, when teams are so good on the counter attack. Stubborn on one hand, but I also think quite naive as well.
But you talk about that sort of high risk defending. There was a perfect example of that against Dortmund. Toprak on the halfway line, right? Toprak goes for a slide tackle inside Dortmund's half, and you just think, you know, that's a high-risk situation anyway. We talked about it when you did your interview for The Ringer with Nagelsmann, and he talked about, you know, not going in for sliding tackles. He doesn't want to do that, you know?
So unpredictable, yeah.
And yet, in that situation, Omar Toprak, the captain of Leverkusen, is making those decisions. You know, Dortmund fans, probably not the best stage for him to perform those kind of mistakes, considering the club he's going to be playing for next season. But honestly, just those individual errors that have accumulated over the season have come back to haunt Schmidt, obviously, because he's lost his job. But let's talk about 2.5 years. Let's have a look at the entire picture. Individual performances of players like Bernd Leno, maybe Omar Toprak, Jonathan Tah, Kevin Campbell. Is he also responsible for the rise of those players? As much as he's, you know, paid for the downfall of the team defensively, those players have certainly elevated their performance. Julian Brandt as well has come on leaps and bounds since joining Leverkusen, and Schmidt has played a large role in that.
I think that's one huge kind of plus point of Schmidt's time at Leverkusen, was the fact that he felt comfortable bringing through young players, and Leverkusen have been doing this for years, and they've been probably one of the most successful teams at doing that. I mean, you look at Kai Havertz playing in the Champions League against Atletico Madrid.
Very, very comfortable.
They're very comfortable with that, and I think that's a really positive thing about Schmidt's time at Leverkusen. I think overall you see it as a success. I mean, I know that the way it's ended is not great, but I think it's an overwhelming success. I mean, you go back to when Leverkusen had Robin Dutt as the manager. Jesus, I mean, some of those games were absolutely horrendous, and you look at the way they got pounded in the Champions League most of the time. I mean, I think 7-1. Schmidt.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Schmidt has brought them on to a new level. You know, obviously he did great work at Salzburg. His style of football was the thing at the time. Obviously now things have changed a little bit and the game has moved on, as it always does, but I think undoubtedly it's been a success. Whether or not Leverkusen can realistically compete for a top four place now, the landscape has changed from the last few years. Can they realistically do that now? I'm not sure. Maybe they have to assess where they can be on a sustainable level every year, because I don't think they are a top four club.
But haven't they set their stall out to be a top four club? I mean, the way that they've tried to market themselves to show that they're wanting to be something bigger than they are. You know, the club is basically, you know, not to make too many bones about it, but it's basically a suburb of Cologne, right? And you're trying to form an identity in an area which is already flooded with football clubs with huge amounts of tradition and history. And they've done a relatively good job. You know, let's not forget that their stadium, I think, was one of the first stadiums before the 2006 World Cup to be built and set up as one of these modern stadiums, right? Yeah. So they have put their foot in the door to a certain extent. But the question that everybody keeps asking, and it's a valid one, is why would you stay true to Leverkusen? You know, you stay true to Cologne because, you know, that's your club and you're from here and that's your area. And it represents a group of people. It's the same with Gladbach. It's the same with Dortmund. It's the same with Schalke. There's a feeling with Leverkusen maybe that there is an identity issue.
Yeah.
Why do you support Bayer Leverkusen, right? And Roger Schmidt, in the last 2.5 years, has certainly done something to improve the, at least the international recognition of the club.
Mm.
But how do you, how does the club move on from that now, having built up their performances and, as you say, done well enough to get to the Champions League consistently?
I've always felt Leverkusen are quite a delicate club in terms of the fact that they're really reliant on being in the Champions League. That's where they get their reputation from.
Their
business model, yeah. Everything's set around being in the Champions League. But also the way that the club has really focused on Chicharito coming in. It was hard not to. I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's hard not to, given the amount of interest. But if you take those two things out of the equation, not being in the Champions League and not having Chicharito, what do Leverkusen have? What's the foundations of that club?
And that's what
we might see. But I mean, if you look at the kind of the landscape of German football right now, is there any difference between Leverkusen and Hoffenheim? They don't have really solid fan bases. They get 25,000 maybe a push. They're both obviously quote unquote company clubs. They both have relied on trainers to push them forward. Now, obviously, Hoffenheim without Nagelsmann would be an interesting proposition. I don't think they would be.
Anyway.
Probably even in the Bundesliga era, to be fair. So it's a very delicate situation, and I think Leverkusen might just have to take a little bit of stock in the next few years. Just say, like, okay, we have punched above our weight in the Champions League. We have punched above our weight in terms of our budget. Okay, they've spent a lot of money in the last few transfer windows, which hasn't worked out, but maybe they have to look at it and say, okay, teams like Schalke are coming back, Leipzig have come into the league, Dortmund are strong. Maybe you have to say, okay, maybe we're not a Champions League club anymore.
But how do you go about that, Leverkusen? You know, we've seen it in the past in the Bundesliga, teams like Wolfsburg and Werder Bremen who've had sort of fleeting experiences in Europe and then have sort of disappeared, you know.
Well, that's the big danger. They don't want to be like Werder Bremen. They don't want to be like Werder Bremen and drop down. And I'm not saying it's possible, but over 3, 4, 5 years, definitely is. I mean, it's not. I'm not trying to be sensationalist here when I say that Leverkusen could get relegated in 4 or 5 years' time, but if they don't build on the foundations that they have, if they don't, you know, have a really kind of microscope on what they're doing. I mean, like, you look at Werder Bremen, they obviously lost a lot of really important players. They didn't replace them, and the manager, I think, lost his touch towards the end. To be fair to Leverkusen, they've made a decision, so they really have taken the bull by the horn, so to speak. And yeah, I mean, we'll see how it pans out. Let's talk about who might replace him in the long term. I mean, that's where I think it gets quite interesting. I mean, I've seen people throwing a lot of names around. Where do you think Leverkusen should go? Should they be going for a hands-on coach? Or should they be going for a traditional manager or a high personality?
Well, I think it comes back to what we were talking about, identity. You know, Leverkusen have tried to, or at least we feel like they've tried to create an identity at the club. We're a Champions League club. We're bigger, you know, and if that's the case, then surely the coach that you appoint has to be a high-profile coach, which I think is why everyone was a bit surprised that Korku got the job, because it's a bit like, who is this guy? You know, if you're outside of Germany, if you don't know,
exactly.
It's a bit of a surprise. Diego Simeone is looking at this going, who is this guy, right? I've got to play a game against this guy. So I think that's on the one hand where perhaps the identity that Leverkusen are trying to create clashes with the short-term appointment, as much as it's understandable to a degree. For me, I think, you know, the game's always developing, as you say, and you have to adapt to that. I think the way that Leverkusen have played in the last 2.5 years has at times been brilliant. Let's look at Leverkusen-Dortmund in the first fixture of this season.
First half of the season, yeah.
Probably the best Leverkusen display this season under Schmidt.
Yeah.
Barcelona
away, brilliant.
Barcelona,
even though they lost,
just really like on point performances.
Perfect, yeah.
And if that's the case, and you want to measure yourself with those kind of performances, then you need to adapt to the errors of the previous coach. I think it sounds a bit silly, but defensively, Leverkusen need to find their feet again. I think they've lost it over the last few months. I'm not saying I would appoint a defensive coach,
mm-hmm.
but I'd certainly put the onus on that rather than, you know, going out gung-ho. That being said, looking at this squad, it's a very attacking squad. It has a lot of talent going forward. It's very quick. But one of the names that stood out amongst all of the suggestions for me, David Wagner, is a very interesting suggestion. You know, I feel like he would get Leverkusen to the next level.
Obviously, assuming that Huddersfield don't get promoted to the Premier League.
That's the big if.
Yes,
you know, from a personal perspective, I'm convinced that Brighton are going to tank. Huddersfield will take second spot. No, look, you know, he turned down Wolfsburg in the winter and was right to turn it down because he's doing some great work at Huddersfield. And anybody who can't see that,
you know, is obviously not looking at the picture right, but if Huddersfield don't make it, and he's gone over there and done some great work, there's no reason why he couldn't, you know, turn to Leverkusen and be an effective choice. Now, he's an odd one because I didn't really think he would be as good as he is when he first went there. I thought, okay, Dortmund's second choice manager, you know, it's not really an inspiring choice, but he's proved himself. So you have that option, right? Or you do, you know, what Hoffenheim did, and you say that you've been cultivating a manager internally for a while, but you get the feeling that Leverkusen...
Marcus von Allen.
Yeah, you get the feeling that it would have been more obvious, you know, right? Not Nagelsmann. Nagelsmann was a little bit obvious about 3 or 4 months before that he made, you know, so... I don't know whether that's the option, or they, you know, they poach someone from another youth team. Who knows, right? Because there are obviously another, you know, new sets of coaches coming all the time. But again, that would be in contrast to the image that the club is trying to create. Obviously, it's very fashionable now to go for young, trendy coaches because of what Nagelsmann has done. That whole thing started with Tuchel. Maybe even started with Klopp a little bit, but I would say Tuchel because there you're talking about managers who weren't really great players.
Laptop coaches.
Yeah, exactly. As they say, right?
Yeah, laptop coaches.
But I think Leverkusen, I think for any manager who has a relatively high-profile name, this is an interesting job. You know, like, the squad is very good. The money is there. Your ambition is to break into a top four. There's no reason why you can't do that. And yes, you're right to say that the league is changing, and the atmosphere and the environment around the league is changing with Leipzig coming in and Dortmund. So you've almost got like a fixed top three now, and therefore you're only really fighting for fourth. And if Nagelsmann stays another season at Hoffenheim, which is a big question mark, then you've got Hoffenheim in there. Okay, Hertha and Frankfurt have fallen by the wayside a bit, but there are lots of sides that are going to push you right until match day 30 to get there. So it wasn't what it was. And obviously with Schalke in a year of transition, Gladbach stabilising, this season was really an opportunity for Leverkusen, I think, to push on. Didn't take it. Schmitz paid the price. But, you know, there are names out there that you think, why not give it a go? Frank de Boer, you know, like, high profile name. I'm not saying he's the right coach. I'm just saying that seems to me like the kind of appointment that Leverkusen's high profile image that they're trying to create would match. Whether he's the right coach, that's the decision the club has to make.
I agree with you. I think you've got to split it into different kind of sections. That, okay, I think Leverkusen's position probably does need a high profile name. I am going to throw a name into the hat right now.
Here we go. Drum roll, ladies and gentlemen.
Jürgen Klinsmann.
Oh!
And why I would say that is because he has a huge name in Germany, of course. He has got great experience. Okay, he wasn't that successful as a US coach. He did a good job, okay, a fairly good job. But Leverkusen have really focused on the US market. They have their whole marketing image is on the US. And they're doing everything they can to break in there. They've gone to the Florida Cup the last 2 years. They are doing so much to really penetrate that market. They've got Javier Hernandez there. Klinsmann is a name that resonates in the US market. Now, that sounds a bit ridiculous that you think about these things, but I think that in modern football, you have to weigh all these things up. Could you tempt Jürgen Klinsmann away from California to
to
Leverkusen?
To be honest, that is quite a toss-up there, isn't it? Californian beach.
Why not?
Or Leverkusen.
If he wants to coach in the Bundesliga, he's not coaching the Bundesliga, apart from Bayern.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting perspective that in modern football that we have to consider those things. I think you're spot on to say that Leverkusen have been working hard on that market. Mm. The question is he the right type of manager? And is he the right type of manager defensively? Because there were obvious question marks about his defensive approach at times with the US. You know, I think a lot of Leverkusen fans might be screaming that maybe he wouldn't necessarily get the best out of this attack either. Mm. You know, the one thing about Schmidt was that there were times, albeit they, you know, not very often, that he could really get that front four working superbly. Now, the key is to get the balance.
Yeah, the balance.
Now, ironically, you know, it sounds silly, but in this situation, in a short gap situation, Dieter Hecking is turning into the perfect short gap Bundesliga coach for this situation. You know, I agree, in Nuremberg he wasn't great. I thought Wolfsburg appointing him was a massive surprise. He proved all of us wrong and did well there. And then the message stopped getting across and it came to an end, which is fine. It happens with managers. The same thing is happening at Gladbach. I'm tempted not to get too carried away to an extent, because longer term, you know, you have to see where they're going to end up. But if Gladbach sneak into the top four, then, you know, wow.
Although Gladbach have the more tradition, it's the same kind of question: are they a top four team?
Absolutely, and I think that's the struggle that Leverkusen face now. You know, they have to. The next appointment is very important for their development into towards cementing themselves as a top four team. Internationally, I think people still think, okay, Bayern Dortmund, and then it's always whoever's going to qualify for the Champions League.
Now Leipzig are probably.
And now Leipzig, of course, but. But Leverkusen over the last few years have built themselves at least recognition on the international stage, consistently being in the Champions League, being that team that people outside of Germany have said, oh yeah, that Bayern Leverkusen, that other team, you know, other than Bayern and Dortmund. So the challenge for them is to make the right appointment to get the balance right on the pitch, but also to keep that image off the pitch going forward.
I mean, there's another couple of names that I kind of tweeted out the other day. Alex Zorniger, who's doing really, really well at Brøndby. If you and obviously this is totally assuming that you want to keep the same style of football. Now, Zorniger didn't do great at Stuttgart, but I thought he was really unlucky. I think that club was a real shitstorm when he went there. And
yeah.
First half of the season, there were times when they played really, really well and just kind of went on point. He did okay at Leipzig. I think they won them the third division. Yeah, got them promotion into the second league.
Absolutely.
So he's got a good track record. Could be an option if they want to go down that road. Peter Hibala, who was the under-19 coach last year, has gone to Holland, plays exactly the same system as Schmidt and Jurgen Klopp, really high-pressure system. He knows the foundations of the club, he knows the under-19 squad, he knows all that kind of structure there. Could be an option, but I would be tempted to go for a big name. I think you need to look at the long term.
Claudio Ranieri?
No. But I think you have to look at big names. I mean, I know that's ridiculous in modern football that you have to consider all the marketing aspect of it, but...
No, I think you're right.
I think you need a coach who's going to give you that extra 5-10%. They've had a good tactical coach in Schmidt. It didn't really work out for them. Maybe getting a guy in who can really push them on, get the fans kind of galvanised. I think Clinton would be the ideal candidate. But David Wagner's a good shout as well.
I think it'll be very interesting to see how they finish this season. Let's look at that. You know, what have we got here? We're in March. You've got the second leg of the Atletico game, and you've got a run-in in the league of what, 10, 11 games? So you've got... There's plenty of room there for Leverkusen to do well. You know, what do you think Korkut has to do in this tiny window, which, you know, for a manager is extremely difficult to turn things around, but...
No chance of top four. There's no chance they're going to hit top four. 13 points is just too much, and I don't see Hoffenheim dropping off.
Do you think they can sneak into the Europa League, maybe?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, what, 6 points to the Europa League positions? Frankfurt and Hertha are on quite a decline right now, and it looks as if those positions are up for grabs.
I'm surprised about that.
Yeah, But I look at Mönchengladbach, and I think they're going to take one of those positions. They're just on fire right now. I could see that happening. Could they get into Europe? Yeah, they could. I mean, but I think it would... It would require quite a turnaround in form for them to do that. I also look at there's 5 points. Yeah, but I mean, I also look at a lot of the players who are maybe underperforming, and I wonder if it's going to turn around quickly enough. I mean, Julian Brandt for me looks really tired. I think he's played a lot of football in the last few years.
Do you think that's why he didn't start against Dortmund?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, but I just think he looks... His decision-making is off, and you mentioned that he came really to the fore under Schmidt, but I don't even think he's played particularly well this year. Aranguiz, of course, I mean, I think he's been a really big disappointment. I'm a huge fan of him when he played at Chile, but...
Yeah, I was surprised, you know, we talked him up and then...
But he's played World Cup 2014, he's played Copa America 2015, Copa America 2016. He's probably knackered, and he's been out injured for a year in that as well, so... I think fatigue is a big problem in that Leverkusen squad. Chicharito looks a little bit off as well, so I'm not sure if it can turn around quickly enough for them to get into Europe. But
let's look at who they have to play.
Okay,
right, in the final sections, they do have to play Hoffenheim, Wolfsburg, Leipzig, Bayern, Schalke, Cologne, Hertha. So all of those teams,
they've got to play everyone. Yeah,
are around them or above them.
So in a sense, it's in their hands.
But in another sense. Could that be, you know, you're Typhoon Korkut, you're walking into this job, you have the following games to work with for this club, and what are the expectations? It's difficult for him, you know, the expectations probably do as best as you can, steady the ship, get us defensively solid, but they have to play Werder Bremen, then they obviously go to Madrid for the second leg. Hoffenheim away, Wolfsburg at home, Darmstadt away, Leipzig away, followed by Munich at home,
okay.
Freiburg away,
oh jeez,
Schalke at home,
okay.
Ingolstadt away, Cologne at home, and they finish in Berlin on the final match day. I mean, let's be honest, that's probably the toughest finish. Yeah. He has to play
everyone other than Dortmund.
Everyone around them. He has to play Freiburg, Cologne and Hertha, three teams that are already going for a European spot that they're going. They have to play Bayern and Leipzig, who are the top two teams in the league. I mean, I don't envy him that.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, but we'll see. Let us know what you think about Typhoon Korkut coming in. We are at the Tribune Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think. Who should they go long term? Do you agree with me they should go for Klinsmann, or do you agree with boring Mr. Harding that they should go for David Wagner, the tactician? Yeah, the hipster choice, yeah, exactly. But that'll do us for part one. We'll come back after the break for part two.
Welcome back to part two. We're going to talk about Borussia Dortmund now, ahead of the Champions League game, obviously played by Leverkusen on the weekend, were rampant at their best, but paid the price, sadly, with Marco Reus being out until the beginning of April with a muscle injury. Real shame to see him out, but huge task now for them against Benfica, losing 1-0 after the opening leg, which they were a bit unlucky in, but surely they're going to turn this around.
I think so. I mean, if you look at the way they've been playing recently, I actually made a point in one of my kind of roundups this weekend. I think when Dortmund are at their best right now, even though they're not perfect, they're probably playing some of the best football in Europe.
Absolutely.
They're just phenomenal on the eye. And I think we've seen in the last few weeks, okay, they've lost at Darmstadt and they drew with Hertha in the cup and stuff like that. I understand that results aren't perfect, but we've seen Dortmund really click together, I think, at times. I think defensively they look much more solid. I think Mark Bartra, for example, has looked really, really good. I keep making the point that people keep comparing him to Hummels because he's in Hummels' position, but I think you've got to separate the two. Hummels is on another level, but Bartra's still doing the best he can, so that's working out really well for Dortmund at the back. Midfield, I think, still a little bit unsure. Still think they need someone in there who can really reinforce things. I think Julian Weigl's been a little bit off this year. Defensively, I think he gets caught out quite a lot.
Do you think it's unfair though? Not unfair, but like on his own?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think he could do with someone really experienced. Sami Khedira, hint hint, is the name that I would probably put in there.
Or Nuri Sahin from 5 years ago.
Yeah, Nuri Sahin from 5 years, exactly, yeah.
That kind of player.
But further up as well, Guerrero looks kind of back to his old self from the weekend. Thought it was great. Dembele, when he's up, when he gets on fire, he's just phenomenal. Yeah. And Aubameyang, I know you've kind of criticised him sometimes, but I think Aubameyang is doing okay. He's finishing off his chances.
Look, I'm happy to say that he's been phenomenal this season, and I've criticised him only in the context that he's done so well that I think he would want, or he would expect himself to be scoring the chances that he's not scoring. Of course it would be ridiculous of me to suggest that he should be scoring everything all of the time, because,
well, I think it's relative, isn't it? Dortmund creates so many good chances,
and that's why, you know, of course, you're going to think in that context, well, he should have scored more, but it's hard to be critical on a side that scored 6 goals on the weekend, and he scored 2 of them. He has 21 this season, and quite frankly, he's got what, the same or more than Lewandowski now at the club, so that speaks enough,
especially when you consider the first 2 years were just a complete write-off.
Exactly, and that says absolutely enough about how important he's become. And you know, you notice it when he doesn't play well because he's so important for them, and it's the same thing for Lewandowski at Bayern.
How important is this game for Dortmund? I know that it's a stupid question, but okay, they want to qualify for next season and that's their prime focus, but how important is this game for Dortmund to, I don't want to say to keep being considered as a top team, but I kind of feel that, I'm not saying they've got Leverkusen syndrome, but we've talked about this before, but they buy a lot of players thinking about tomorrow and not thinking about today.
Yeah,
Dortmund want to be a top team today. Is this a huge game in that context?
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent point. We've talked about it enough saying, why don't they buy players? You know, I think the excuse is that we're not big enough or people don't want to come to us yet. I don't think that's valid anymore. Dortmund have created enough of a brand, enough of a
enough of a
it's a lure, it's a huge lure.
That stadium alone, yeah, you know, yeah, playing in that stage. Mm. And I think to suggest they couldn't sign someone like Sami Khedira is ridiculous, because they could.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely wanted to. It's just a question of where they're investing. And, you know, it's great that, you know, the internet is full of billboards of Dortmund's future and these bright young kids, and that's all great for the YouTube generation, and that's wonderful. And it is great to see players like Dembele shining prematurely, because he's come to fruition a lot sooner than I thought he would. But at the same time, there are still moments in big games, and this is a big game,
yeah,
where experience or calmed heads, you know, haven't been there. And I think in that context, as much as we're talking about the children of tomorrow, Dortmund have to prove that they can also be children of today on this evening at home against Benfica, because I think, you know, finishing in the top four is something that they are very capable of doing. I think they'll get there in the end. It won't have been pretty, but I think they'll get there. But this team, and I've said this in a lot this season, is set up for knockout competitions, you know, and that's why I'm so intrigued to see them play Bayern, I expect, because they will beat Lotto, I think, in the semi-finals of the German Cup, because this team is a team set up for those situations. You know, the long haul is sometimes not so easy for them. And yet, when it comes down to it, you know, they played fantastic football against Benfica in the first leg. They were just a bit unlucky. Aubameyang had a really bad day, and you lose 1-0. And
from a set piece.
From a set piece, I know. But since then, or at least since the Darmstadt situation and that horrible afternoon, I feel like something's happened. Defensively, they've stirred themselves into action. I think Bartra's, you know, on form, now the best defender at the club in terms of on form. Socrates has actually dropped off a bit of late. I think it's a huge game for Tuchel as well, to prove that he's still, I mean, it's hard to suggest that he hasn't got a grip on the situation, but he will want the chance to play against a big name in the quarterfinals. You know, he'll want something like that, because I personally believe they can make the semi-finals with the right draw for the quarterfinals. And even if not, let's not forget, this team topped the group ahead of the defending champions. They gave Real Madrid a hell of a go in both games. And there's no reason why, given the right draw and the right performances, Dortmund can't be in the final. You know,
oh, absolutely.
They're that type of team. But this game is the kind of game you have to win on the way to winning these tournaments, yeah, because it's uncomfortable. You're expected to win. You're expected to dominate. You've come off an absolute marauding performance against a league opponent who is, you know, potentially a rival of yours. And everybody's looking to you to win 3-0 and put the icing on the cake of what would have been, you know, a fantastic few weeks. This is where the experience of these young players, or the quality of these over-experience or inexperience, has to shine.
There's a real question mark for me about just the whole kind of game management of the squad and possibly even the coach as well. I mean, I go back to the Liverpool game last year where they shouldn't have lost that game, and I think a more experienced head would have tried to adapt in the game, and I know Tuchel does that, but I think there's times when he could be a little bit more pragmatic and try to kill the game rather than actually having this kind of romanticised view of, okay, let's just dominate possession, let's try and maintain what we're trying to do, rather than just saying, right, let's just shut it down and let's just see it out. And I think the one game where they did that was against Bayern at home, and I don't think it was a coincidence that they had Mario Götze in the team and Andre Schürrle, because they had those experienced heads, guys who have been there and done it, World Cup finals, all that kind of thing. I still had my doubts that players like Pulisic, although he is impressive, really, really impressive in the Bundesliga, I have my doubts that these guys have that kind of tactical nous at the moment. But then again, it's the second leg, I don't think really requires that. I think it's a case of going in there, getting the job done, yeah, and getting out there. That's the way of doing it. And I think the way that Dortmund have been playing from an attacking point of view, 12 goals in the last three games, I would be absolutely astounded if they didn't score. I mean, it's going to take something horrendous for them not to go and score in that game. 1-0 away from home is not a bad result. Really, I know
just
that. I know
looking
that,
at the game, though, yeah, obviously they would.
Yeah, well, exactly. An away goal always helps, but I mean, okay, 1-0 and 1-1 is a lot of a difference because of the away goal, but you still have to go and score at home, so it doesn't really make a huge difference.
So, in that context, you're saying Dortmund need to shut games down more, but actually, this time they need to play like they did against Leverkusen.
Yeah exactly. Just go out and kill it. All guns blazing. Yeah. I mean, okay, you're a little bit open to the counter attack, but I think we've seen that Dortmund defensively are actually a little bit better. I think you can have the confidence in those players. I think if players like Bartra keep delivering performances like they are, I think you can have the confidence in these guys to not say be a little bit more exposed, but a little bit more open. But put players like Mark Bartra in situations where he has to make a big decision, like top right on the halfway line, making a slide tackle. Bartra wouldn't do that. I think he's a little bit more intelligent to try and, you know, jog the player. Or,
it looks like he's learning.
He's learning very, very quickly, and I think Tuchel has to take huge credit in that. Absolutely. But I agree with you. I think this Dortmund team could go all the way. I look at the competition this year, and okay, you know, Barca and Real. Barca are probably going to go out by the looks of things.
Yeah.
PSG look the most complete team. I have my money on Sevilla. I think they're a good side, but I think Dortmund, if they can keep Dembele fit. This is a huge question mark around him. He's so fragile, and I kind of feel for him at times, because the Hertha game was just hilarious when he played 90 minutes and lies under a blanket for half an hour and then comes on. Like, what? That's crazy. But
so many opponents, I think, are left bamboozled by him that they don't know what else to do other than to kick him, and I think that's a problem. Do you think, in the same respect as Dembele being important, that Royce's absence will be a problem? I mean, I know that you've been critical of him in the past, and especially in big games, he hasn't delivered at all, really. Yeah. He's got a bad track record of that. But recently, he certainly looked like he was coming back, and I feel like it's obviously another blow for a player who's been crippled by injuries.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really surprising. I mean, one hit and he's down. I mean, don't get me wrong, he gets some really rough treatment. I mean, he really does get the kind of the short straw, but I actually think it's more Götze. I think Götze's a huge loss. I know that people have... There's still this kind of perception around Götze. I don't know what you think about this, but on social media that, he's not working hard enough. Or he's not got the right attitude. Or he's not good enough. And I just don't buy that. I think he is good enough. I think he's shown it this year. I think he does have the right attitude. I think he works really hard. And I think the club have realised that, okay, obviously, this whole kind of metabolic disorder is not something that we ever knew about, but... Yeah. I think you can't question the guy's work ethic, and I just think a player, not just of the experience of him, but the fact that he's so good in tight spaces, he's so good under pressure, he's not a guy who's faced. And I also just think having Mario Götze on your team just kind of elevates everyone else, because I mean, if you're Julian Weigl, right, and you've got your midfield of Mario Götze and Ousmane Dembele, or you've got Kagawa or Castro, you're kind of like, I'm going to have to do a lot of the dirty work here. But if you get Goose in the team, it kind of elevates everyone else to another level. I think without him, they're certainly weakened, but I don't think they're going to have any problems this week. I'm pretty confident they'll go through.
Do you think that the just to touch on the Götze issue, do you think that obviously with this all being well and good and solved in 3 or 4 months, you know, that
That's a
he comes back
mark.
Next season and
huge question mark.
With this maybe being the question mark behind all of the issues in the last year or so, if he can get over this, can he really get back? You know, let's not forget that he's still only 24 years old, right? So
I think he's been open enough to admit that he's not the same player. He's not the guy who's going to run 40 yards on the counter-attack.
No.
And that's where he was always really good. He was never a playmaker as such, of really kind of taking the ball into feet and dominating the game and all that kind of thing. He was always a counter-attacking player, but he's not that anymore. He has to be a number 8. He has to be a player who is... You know, getting between the lines,
good in tight spaces,
linking up with other players, tight spaces, bringing up people and thinking a little bit more selfless. You know, not taking the headlines, doing a little bit more of the dirty work, like Guerrero does when he plays in the midfield. He just creates opportunities for other players, and I think he's hugely missed. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's also a bit worrying for Dortmund that 3 of their biggest assets are not really delivering. Royce has been injured for most of the season. Schürrle has been injured most of the season. Götze has been injured. Not injured as such, but obviously recovering from this illness. It's a bit of a problem when the players that you have brought in for the now are not delivering. And I think, from my perspective, I think in the summer they're going to have to really add that kind of experience into the squad.
One player that I've been really impressed with is Eric Durm, though. Since he's come back, I think he's added a real... It's been a tactical masterstroke for me from Tuchel, because I feel like he's added a defensive stability that has allowed... That side, I mean, obviously Dembele has been very effective down the middle of late, but when he's drifted wide, having that sort of insurance of Durham out there has been very effective. And what's been interesting as well, that Schmelzer hasn't really played in the last couple of games, and that actually Guerrero has been favoured in certain positions where you sort of think, well, this is working really, really well. And it makes you question whether the defensive approach earlier on in the season was not the most effective. Or maybe it's just a case of, you know, throughout the season things change and you have to adapt to players being in certain moods and certain types of form. But I feel like the team that played against Leverkusen is really looking like the strongest team now for Dortmund going into this stretch. Obviously, with Royce being out, you have to make some adjustments. But Is it finally a case of Tuchel knowing his best 11 at the best time of the season?
I don't know if it's his best 11 on paper, but certainly in terms of the performances in the last few games, especially since the Darmstadt game, I think you'd have to say, yeah, it probably is. And I think there are a couple of guys who have come into that team. Piszczek, I think, has played in central positions quite a lot in the last few weeks. It looks really solid. Erik Durham, it's a great point. I think Erik Durham's actually really, really good. Pulisic also has, I think when he's came on, has played a big, big role. It must be hard for him when Ousmane Dembele is just tearing it up.
I think he's effective off the bench, though. He seems to have played well to that role.
I think he's improving tactically every week. He's doing much, much better off the ball. I think defensively he looks much more solid. But yeah, I just have doubts about the kind of the central area of the team maybe lacking that kind of experience. But no, I mean, I agree with you that I think this is probably Dortmund's best team at the moment, at the right time, and they're coming off a perfect run of form. You know, as I said, 12 goals in the last three games. It's ideal going into this game where they know that they have to really click in it from an attacking perspective.
Well, let's talk about another team that are also clicking and are delivering in an attacking sense, and that's Bayern Munich. Obviously have sealed a very comfortable first leg win against Arsenal that leaves the second leg a bit obsolete, really.
It would be like the best comeback of like
of all time
Champions League history. Yeah, yeah, I
absolutely
know.
You know, there's obviously a lot of decisions for Carlo Ancelotti to make going into this. They come off a very decent performance in Cologne where Manuel Neuer had an excellent game, and they just look like they clicked. It's got to the point now with Bayern where even defenders are scoring a lot of goals for them. But you know, what do you do if you're Ancelotti in this situation? You're 5-1 up.
I think you've got to keep going. I mean, I think momentum now is really important for Bayern. I mean, you touched on it there that they have clicked, and it's not awe-inspiring because maybe it's kind of expected that Bayern would win these games. But I think the way Bayern are playing right now is total domination. It's total domination. Thiago in the last few games has just been phenomenal. But you look at the way that they beat, I know Hamburg, they're not an outstanding team, but they were on a great run of form. They beat Leipzig 3-0 away, but they smashed them 8-0. Absolutely smashed them 8-0. They played Schalke in the German Cup. Game was over by like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally need 20 minutes to win games. They don't even need the full 90 minutes. They're just in a phenomenal shape right now, and I was a little bit sceptical about this idea of, Ancelotti's just being a little bit more relaxed so that the team can peak later on the season. I didn't really buy that. Yes. Now I'm beginning to see it. I'm looking at players like Thomas Müller who have come back into the team recently. He looks fresh. He looks as if he's back to his old self. Lewandowski, of course, is still in great form. But I think it's really important to keep going because actually in the league they've got some really hard games coming up. They've got to play every team that they drop points against in the next 4 or 5 weeks. So they've got Dortmund to play at home. They've got to play Frankfurt. They've got to play Cologne. They've got to play Hoffenheim. So it's a lot of pressure on Bayern to maintain not just the Champions League form, but also the Bundesliga form, because you know these are hard games. And you look at the way Bayern have played even when they've been at their best. They've found it hard against these teams. I think it was 2-2 in Frankfurt, 1-1 at home to Hoffenheim, draw with Cologne at home. So I think big test for Bayern coming up in the next few weeks, but I think things are looking well for them in the Champions League. I mean, obviously, it kind of depends on what happens with Barcelona, but would you say they're favourites for the European Cup this year?
Yeah, I have to be. If we're talking about Dortmund being one of the and having a good chance of getting to the final, then surely Bayern have to have an excellent chance of winning the competition. I mean, the performance against Arsenal was majestic, and it's interesting that you say, you know, 20 minutes they only need, because I thought that was one of the trademarks of Guardiola's time at the club, particularly in the second season, where it was very noticeable that with a very effective swarming tactic in the first 20 minutes, overwhelming the opposition, that they just shut down the contest, and that the other team had no answers. And actually, since the first leg of this game, they have been in that form every game. And, you know, Robert Lewandowski is leading the way, you know, by example. I think he's got something like 12 in 10, and it just absolutely monstrous form. Mm. But Juan Bernat has been playing really well. And, you know, we've talked about Bayern and the transition that they have to make in the next few years with Robin and Xabi Alonso and Lahm, people getting older and key players. But it does look like not only are they clicking, but some of these other players are finding their feet again.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, actually. Like, I think when Ancelotti has look to rotate the squad. I think all of the guys who've come in, possibly other than Sanchez, who's not really been giving a really big opportunity, but Rafinha has come in, done really well. Kimmich has come in, done really well. Bernat is a great shout, coming well. Thomas Müller, incredibly, has been used as a rotational player, but he's done really, really well. And I think that's probably one big difference between Bayern, Leipzig and Dortmund, is that Bayern just have that strength and depth where they can rotate and they can make changes every couple of games, and it's fresh. Whereas with Leipzig, you saw it at the weekend, you know, they really need a couple of different options, I think. And I think that's a credit to Ancelotti. I think the way that he's managed this squad has been good. Like I said, I was quite sceptical about this idea that, oh, if you take the shackles off the players, they'll peak towards the end, but it really has worked for them. And I think, you know, whereas guys like Aranguiz for Leverkusen, who have played, you know, for the last two or three summers, are looking absolutely exhausted, I think Bayern are looking quite fresh now.
Would you make any major changes for the Arsenal game?
Wouldn't make any changes. Just keep going for it. I mean, obviously Manuel Neuer looks as if he might miss the game through injury. I mean, yeah, he's been training on his own the last few days. He might play, I don't know, but in that kind of circumstance, okay, you might want to leave him out if he's injured.
Also, I think if you can give Sven Ulreich a chance, you know.
Well, I mean, the odds on but Arsenal coming back must kind of fall if Sven Ulreich singles.
Even Sven Ulreich can get a game.
No, it's not going to happen. But I think Bayern are in good shape right now. Bayern are in really good shape. I made the point on Twitter last night that I think they're probably playing some of the best football in Europe right now. Not awesome on the eye, but it's just total domination. It's snuffing out the opposition. Like you say, it's not obviously overwhelming the opposition. And I think the next few weeks will be a huge test for them in the Bundesliga because they're up against more kind of sturdy teams. But
is there anyone you'd like to see them face in the next round?
Biggest test would be, I think, PSG based on the current performances. But I think they're probably strong enough for most of the teams. They don't really want to get Real Madrid now. But, you know, eventually they're going to have to beat one of these teams, whether it's Man City. But then,
surely,
I think there's more of a threat. Teams like Monaco, teams like Napoli, yeah, if they beat Real Madrid or Sevilla, that's more of a danger, I think, because there could be a kind of
unknown
complacency. Yeah, more of the unknown, exactly. But I think PSG, I know PSG are looking good, but I think if Bayern come up against them, they'd be strong enough. It reminds me a little bit of the Leipzig game where there was all the kind of talk about Leipzig. Yeah, and they just kind of swatted them away, no problem. But I think they have to be favourites for winning the Champions League. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a great shout. Why not? You know, and it would be, surely it would be the irony of all ironies. Ancelotti in his first season would collect the trophy that Guardiola spent 3 years trying to get and couldn't win. And if, even more so, if on the way, he beats Manchester City.
Right. Let's wrap this up. Shout from the tribuna. Loud and proud, John.
Loud and proud. Two things. One, refereeing this weekend in the Bundesliga was horrendous.
As always.
Yeah, it's been notably poor this season, but there have been a couple of really bad weekends. I think this is one. Cologne not getting a penalty. We talked about Bernard playing well, but there was a foul there for me.
Bayern Dizel. No.
Yeah, well, you can say what you like, but the worst instance is in Frankfurt, where the offside... offside goal that gave Freiburg the equaliser was offside, and even worse, Frankfurt scored a completely legitimate goal where goalkeepers were once again overprotected. So there were other instances across the weekend, but those were the two that stood out for me, and just not a good weekend. Defensively, we talked about Toprak. That was worrying. Leverkusen were generally quite poor. Wendell not going out. What else have I got here? I've made a list. Cologne for Bayern's opening goal. There are four men in the box, and not marking anyone. And Javier Martinez gets in between all four. And obviously, it's not always easy to react instantly. But if you are in a 4-1 advantage, you shouldn't be conceding. And also, Schalke for Gladbach's opener. There were actually a number of incidences that I could have used for Schalke, because such is the nature of their defensive play at the moment. But Alessandro Schöpf is not a right wing back. He's not a right back. The only thing he is a right mid. He's a right winger. He's not even. Yeah, exactly. He's a sprinter who can finish. And I think that's been exposed. The opening goal for Gladbach is a perfect example of that. Fabian Johnson makes a run from 5 yards outside the box and gets to the near post before Hervidis and Schöpf. Hervidis then berates Schöpf for not shouting and letting him know that he's coming. But that's also, as much as that's definitely the right thing to do and Schupp should be letting him know, that's also on Hervidis to check, and he does check, but too late. And, you know, things like that, just disappointing. So refereeing and defending are my two wishes.
Nice.
What about you?
I want to sing the praises of Sebastian Rudy. I think he's been absolutely brilliant this season, and I keep watching this guy thinking...
He looks like a Bayern player.
Yeah, he does look like a Bayern player, and I know that it's really unfashionable.
Sounds crazy, but
the perception of Rudy when Bayern confirmed they were going to sign him was, oh, this guy's not going to be good enough. I just completely disagree. I think he's been playing at such a high level this year that I think he would be even better playing in the Bayern team. I think tactically he looks great. I think he's positionally so good. I think you don't see him, like the Nagelsmann point about not making slide tackles, you don't see him make a lot of slide tackles, and that's down to the fact that he's always in the right position. He's always in the right position. Okay, he scored a goal from like 40 yards against Ingolstadt, that's a side point, but he is a leader. I think that's what Bayern need, players who can play under pressure. I'm looking at someone like Alonso right now, who is definitely a better user of the ball than Sebastian Rudi. I don't think he's a better defensive player, and perhaps that's what Bayern are thinking about. They're thinking, okay, we need a guy who is reliable enough to play in more than one position.
Do you think that's Nagelsmann, or do you think that's time in the Germany team?
No, I think that's a good question. Could be both.
I'm inclined to think it's a Löw thing.
Yeah, it could be. It's a good point. But I still think Bayern will sign a defensive midfielder. Verratti is the name that's being touted around. But you need a guy who can be reliable enough to step into different positions and have that kind of football intelligence like Philipp Lahm did. And I think Sebastian Rudi has that. I mean, I know that he's not Philipp Lahm level technically, but you know, like, he's still not that old. I think he's 25, 26 years old. Still really young. I think 3 or 4 years at Bayern, I think he could become really, really good. I think it's a really good signing. And I think if I'm looking at that Hoffenheim team right now, I know that Sandro Wagner's been great this year and Kramaric at times, but I think Sebastian Rudi's been the top player, and I think he deserves so much more credit.
Over Niklas Süle?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for me anyway. But I think he deserves. I think he doesn't get a lot of credit. I don't think he's a very fashionable player. But even thinking about the Germany team from a defensive perspective, I think he's probably one of your best to play in front and the back four.
Nice. Well, that's
a wrap.
That wraps that up. Tribune Podcast. We are at the Tribune Podcast. Give us a tweet. Give us a follow. Give us a gif.
Yeah.
Why not? I love that. Ross Dunbar 93, you can follow him there. He's probably the most informed man on Twitter when it comes to sport or finger on the pulse, so give him a follow.
I stick to sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
No politics for me.
Unlike some other members of the podcast. Yes. I'm at JohnBlog66, and thanks for listening.